Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So last weekend I was up in Portland. Of course, there were several of us: Ajahn Bricha, Ajahn Yatiko, Ajahn Kurundamo, Ajahn Ahingsako, Ajahn Yaniko. We're all up there along with many others. Lumpa Samedo, of course. Jen Sona, Jen Viradamo, and you know, it's quite a inspiring occasion of the beginning of the new Dhamma Hall for Portland Friends of the Dhamma. Of course, you know, various people came and talked and asked questions and had discussions over the several days that we were up there. And without any kind of planning or any design, one of the themes that came up, or you know, questions that came up, and discussions that came up were around faith, and I think it could have been maybe the catalyst of the weekend, or I don't know what say the conditions were, but there seemed to be. Several people asking questions and wanting to speak about the nature of faith. And, you know, I think it's an important aspect of how we approach our practice, and because we tend to have a fair bit of suspicion when it comes to the quality of faith, and could be a reaction to our own cultural experiences and the models that we've seen in the Abrahamic religions. But you know, I think it's important to be able to understand how to use faith and then also how to relate to faith. Because I think there's a certain reaction because of our cultural biases, and then can be a kind of inclination and encouragement to a skepticism. And there's a problem with skepticism as well. And I think of the even in the Buddha's time, there's an occasion when a wandering ascetic, Diganaka, comes to see the Buddha. And when he comes to the Buddha and exchanges greetings with him, and then he sort of declares that the basis of his worldview and, say, my doctrine and view is this: nothing is acceptable to me. And the Buddha, being pretty sharp and very quick, said, "Well, this doctrine and view of yours, that nothing is acceptable to me, surely this is acceptable to you." And there's an inherent kind of problem in the logic of that. So that, of course, that didn't slow him down. But then what the Buddha does is then go to the nature of, starts to explain the nature of views, in the sense that when we hold a view, say that nothing is acceptable to me, and we perceive that this is true and all else is false, then inevitably what happens is we end up in conflict and argument with others. But the same is true if one holds a view that, say, everything is acceptable to me. I'm sort of a completely positive and completely accepting, embracing of everything. And one holds the view that this is true, everything else is false. You end up in conflict and argument. Or even if you hold the view that some things are acceptable and some things aren't acceptable to me, and you hold that that is true and everything else is false, you still end up in conflict, so that the holding of views is the basis of conflict. And, of course, the purpose of the Buddha's teachings is not to increase conflict, increase difficulty, increase suffering. And to be able to understand the nature of views. And to a certain degree, one has to, and this is where it comes back to a certain, what's the function of faith in the Buddhist teachings? And to be able to pick up a particular perspective that the Buddha is giving and to reflect on it, to investigate it, to hold it with enough faith that one can then put it to use, test it, see if it works, see if it actually leads to, say, a decrease in conflict, a decrease in inner strife, and an increase in well-being. So that the function of faith is really to be able to give oneself enough of a basis to be able to practice. And it's really important to see that it's not to hold a belief system. It's to be able to set aside that tendency to be skeptical, to doubt, to be critical, to be negative, to be hesitant, to waver, and to apply oneself to the teaching, to the practice. And that's why when in the Buddha's teaching, of course, there's many different sets of teachings that the Buddha gives, which I tend to encourage looking at as templates for investigation or templates for experience. Of course, one of the templates is the five spiritual faculties: faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. Saddha, sila, sati, samadhi, panya. Those are tools that we rely on for our spiritual practice. And it's interesting to recognize that faith is the first quality. But it's, how do you say, if one looks at it as a progression, then in order for faith to be functioning properly, it should result in effort, so that there's an actual effort or energy for the practice arising and being applied. And that's its appropriate result or appropriate application. And then also, traditionally, when those spiritual faculties and spiritual powers are being taught about and explained, it's also pointed to that they're actually kind of two pairs, with mindfulness balancing the two pairs, so that faith and wisdom are a pair that have to balance each other, work with each other, and then effort and concentration are a pair that balance each other, work with each other, need to be seen in conjunction with each other, so that faith and wisdom have to function together. They have to support each other. Faith without wisdom or discernment ends up into just a blind belief, holding to view. But wisdom without faith often turns into a kind of a cleverness or a kind of an empty intellectual analysis of things. Because if wisdom and discernment don't really have some kind of faith that backs it up, that allows one to step beyond the intellect and the rational, then it doesn't really lead one to a place of relinquishment or insight. But this aspect of faith is a really, you know, it's an important element to be investigating, to be paying attention to as a foundation for our practice. And the, you know, that aspect of faith is, you know, faith is sometimes not such a great word even to use, because it does come with our cultural baggage. So maybe confidence is a good word. Conviction is another aspect, because some things, you know, on a certain level, you can't really know what will it be like if I sit here cross-legged and watch my breath. I mean, what? If you think about it rationally, I mean, what a stupid thing to do. Surely there must be more important things to do with your life. But when one applies oneself to it and trains and investigates and applies effort, and there's this kind of settling and clarifying that arises quite naturally. It's just the nature of the mind is kind of revealed to us, not through thinking it through, figuring it out, analyzing it, it's kind of ad nauseum, but by experiencing it, seeing it more clearly, experiencing it more directly. But it's that there's a certain element of faith that is needed in order to just stay with something simple, like the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out. So that aspect of faith is important. Or where the Buddha says that desire is the cause of suffering. And looking at, you know, what does it feel like when we have a desire? We desire something. We want something. And the feeling is if I don't get it, I'm going to suffer. I'm going to be miserable. I'm going to be bereft. I'm going to be missing out. And you know, that feels awful. But so there needs to be a certain element of faith. And so, a relinquishing desire is actually going to feel good. I'm going to actually feel better when I relinquish desire. So, and that requires a certain leap of faith, to be willing to not follow desire, not follow craving, not follow attachment. And that's it's kind of counterintuitive. But when you actually do it, you realize, there's a release and spaciousness that comes from the willingness to see through that constant kind of push, constant pressure on the mind, on the heart, that keeps saying, if you don't get what you like, what you want, what you desire, you're not going to be happy. But the feeling, of course, is when you see through that nature of desire, you're able to drop the actual desire process. There's this incredible peace that comes, incredible ease. And, you know, it's a leap of faith to be able to do that. You know, so that, you know, it does take some reflection, analysis, but yeah, in the end, it's faith is an important element in what is going to help us to really come to a place of relinquishing, releasing, letting go. So that when the Buddha teaches referring back to that Dīgānaka Sutta, you know, the Buddha doesn't just sort of criticize that kind of a stance of radical skepticism. He gives a critique of it, but then he also gives the tools for how to hold and investigate experience. And of course, again, the Buddha gives many, many, many templates and tools for that. In this case, he uses the body and feeling. These are a basic foundation for our experience of the world. But then to pay attention to the nature of the body being subject to aging, sickness, death, the body being subject to dissolution, to change, to discomfort, to disease, not a satisfactory condition. So to be able to pull back from that attachment to the body. And then paying attention to the nature of feeling. And the Buddha pointing to the fact there's just these three kinds of feeling: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And when we experience a pleasant feeling, we don't experience the unpleasant or the neutral. When we experience an unpleasant feeling, we don't experience the pleasant or the neutral. When we experience a neutral feeling, we don't experience the pleasant and the unpleasant. It's sort of, there is that feeling itself. And it's a moment-to-moment experience. And that each feeling that we do experience, it's conditioned, it's dependently arisen, it's impermanent, it's unstable, it's changing. And, you know, whether it's body or whether it is feeling, none of that is worthy of establishing a sense of self. This is me, this is mine, this is who and what I am. Because then what it does is you start looking at, viewing things from the experience of body and mind, and seeing that this is what we hold to be self, this is what we view the world from, and this body, this mind, say like with feeling, is your primal basis of what the mind is. And then from feeling, it'll build up into emotion, perception, consciousness, all the thinking processes. But at the root of all that is just feeling that we then, everything spins out from that. So that coming back to something more fundamental, and when we do come back to something more fundamental and recognize its nature, the inclination is to lean to disenchantment, dispassion, relinquishing, releasing. And it's in that way that we give the opportunity to incline the heart to freedom. And that, you know, one doesn't come to that place through skepticism and negativity. There needs to be a certain application of faith. But of course, you start seeing, well, that when the Buddha describes faith, it's always bound up and supported by discernment and wise reflection. So that when we apply those teachings, there's a different result, because the nature of faith or conviction or confidence is that it's willing to do something. It's willing to give something. It's willing to actually show up and be present for something, which isn't you're always holding back when there's that kind of skepticism or one is distancing oneself. But faith requires us to move forward. And it's important to do that. Because that's, say, like relinquishing and releasing isn't just coming from the, nothing is acceptable to me kind of stance. It's sort of having seen it clearly, then one recognizes that it's to one's advantage to release and relinquish. Otherwise, we're just piling on more suffering for ourselves. So that the Buddha's goal is always to give us the tools to allow us to experience freedom from suffering, to allow us to experience this path to real true peace. And I mean, it's interesting that particular discourse that the Buddha gave to Dīgānaka is the discourse that was the catalyst for Sariputta to experience arahantship. He was already a stream enterer, and he was attending to the Buddha. He was fanning him, and while the Buddha was teaching this wanderer from another sect, and there was this the cause and condition for Sariputta's awakening. So this, it's an effective means for reflection and investigation. So I'll offer that for your reflection this evening.
Pandamaya.